I thought there'd be more swelling and bruising, I said. The pathologist glanced at me.
I told you, he said. All the drama was after he was dead. No heartbeat, no blood pressure, no circulation. Therefore, no swelling and no contusions. Not much bleeding, either. It was just leaking out by gravity. If he'd been alive when they cut him, it would have been running like a river.
He turned back to the table and finished up inside the guy's brain pan and put the lid of bone back where it belonged. He tapped it twice to get a good seal and wiped the leaky join with a sponge. Then he pulled the guy's face back into place, poked and prodded and smoothed with his fingers. And when he took his hands away, I saw the Special Forces sergeant I'd spoken to in the strip club, staring blindly upward into the bright lights above him. I took a Humvee and drove past Andrea Norton's PSYOP school to the Delta Force station. It was pretty much self-contained in what had been a prison back before the Army collected all its miscreants together at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas. The old wire and the walls suited its current purpose. There was a giant World War II-era airplane hangar next to it. It looked like it had been dragged in from some closed base and bolted back together to house their racks of stores and their trucks and their up-armored Humvees and maybe even a couple of fast-response helicopters. The sentry on the inner gate let me in, and I went straight to the adjutant's office. 7:30 in the morning, and it was already lit up and busy, which told me something. The adjutant was at his desk. He was a captain. In the upside-down world of Delta Force, the sergeants are the stars, and the officers stay home and do the housework. "You got anyone missing?" I asked him. He looked away, which told me something more. "I assume you know I do," he said. "Otherwise, why would you be here?" "You got a name for me?"
"A name?
I assumed you'd arrested him for something."
"This is not about an arrest," I said.
"So, what's it about?"
"Does this guy get arrested a lot?"
"No, he's a fine soldier."
"What's his name?"
The captain didn't answer, just leaned down and opened a drawer and pulled a file. Handed it to me. Like all the Delta files I'd ever seen, it was heavily sanitized for public consumption. There were just two pages. The first was a name, rank, and number ID sheet and a bare-bones career summary for a guy called Christopher Carbone. He was an unmarried 16-year veteran. He had served 4 years in an infantry division, 4 in an airborne division, 4 in a ranger company, and 4 in Special Forces Detachment D. He was 5 years older than me. He was a sergeant first class. There were no theater details and no mention of awards or decorations. The second sheet contained 10 inky fingerprints and a color photograph of the man I'd spoken to in the bar and just left on the mortuary slab. "Where is he?" the captain asked. "What happened?"
"Someone killed him," I said.
"What?"
"Homicide," I said.
"When?"
"Last night, 9 or 10 o'clock.
"Where?"
"Edge of the woods."
"What woods?"
"Our woods, on post."
"Jesus Christ, why?"
I put the file back together and slipped it under my arm. "I don't know why," I said. "Yet."
"Jesus Christ," he said again. "Who did it?"
"I don't know," I said. "Yet."
"Jesus Christ,"
the guy said for the third time. "Next of kin?" I asked. The captain paused, breathed out.
"I think he has a mother somewhere," he said. "I'll let you know."
"Don't let me know," I said. "You'll be the one making the call." He said nothing. "Did Carbone have enemies here?" I asked.
"None that I knew about."
"Any points of friction?
Like what?
Any lifestyle issues?
He stared at me.
What are you saying?
Was he gay?
What? Of course not.
I said nothing.
You're saying Carbone was a fag?
The captain whispered.
I pictured Carbone in my mind, lounging 6 feet from the strip club runway, 6 feet from whoever was crawling around at the time on her elbows and knees with her ass up in the air and her nipples brushing the stage, a long neck bottle in his hand and a big smile on his face. It seemed like a weird way for a gay man to spend his leisure time. But then I pictured the detachment in his eyes and his embarrassed gesture as he waved the brunette hooker away.
I don't know what Carbone was, I said.
Then keep your damn mouth shut,
his captain said.
Sir.
I took Carbone's file with me back to the mortuary and collected Summer and took her to the O Club for breakfast. We sat down on our own in a corner, far from everyone else. I ate eggs and bacon and toast. Summer ate oatmeal and fruit and glanced through the file. I drank coffee. Summer drank tea.
The pathologist is calling it gay bashing,
she said.
He thinks it's obvious.
He's wrong.
Carbone's not married.
Neither am I said. Neither are you. Are you gay?
No.
There you go.
But misdirection has to be based on something real, right? I mean, if they knew he was a gambler, for instance, they might have crammed IOU slips in his mouth or thrown playing cards all around the place. Then we might have thought it was about gambling debts, you see what I mean? It just doesn't work if it's not based on anything. Something that can be disproved in 5 minutes looks stupid, not clever.
Your best guess?
He was gay, and someone knew it, but it wasn't the reason.
I nodded. It wasn't the reason, I said. Let's say he was gay. He was in 16 years. He survived most of the 70s and all of the 80s. So why would it happen now? Times are changing, getting better. He's getting better at hiding it, going out to strip joints with his buddies. No reason for it to happen now, all of a sudden. It would have happened before. 4 years ago, or 8, or 12, or 16. Whenever he joined a new unit, new people got to know him.
So what was the reason?
No idea.
Whatever. It could be embarrassing. Just like Kramer in his motel.
I nodded again. A bird seems to be a very embarrassing place.
You think this is why you're here, Carbone?
It's possible. Depends on what he represents. I asked Summer to file and forward all the appropriate notifications and reports, and I headed back to my office. Rumor was spreading fast. I found 3 Delta sergeants waiting for me, looking for information. They were typical Special Forces guys. Small, lean, whippy, slightly unkempt, hard as nails. 2 of them were older than the third. The young one was wearing a beard. He was tan, like he was just back from somewhere hot. They were all pacing in my outer office. My sergeant with the baby son was there with them. I guess she was pulling a swing shift. She was looking at them like they might have been alternating spells of pacing with spells of hitting on her. She looked very civilized in comparison to them, almost genteel. I ushered them all into my inner office and closed the door and sat down at my desk and left them standing in front of it.
Is it true about Carbone?
One of the older two said. He was killed, I said. Don't know who, don't know why.
When?
Last night, 9 or 10 o'clock.
Where?
Here.
This is a closed post.
I nodded. The perp wasn't a member of the general public.
We heard he was messed up good.
Pretty good.
When are you going to know who it was?
Soon, I hope.
You got leads?
Nothing specific.
When you know? Are we gonna know, too?
You want to?
You bet your ass.
Why?
You know why, the guy said.
I nodded. Gay or straight, Carbone was a member of the world's most fearsome gang. His buddies were gonna stand up for him. I felt a little envious for a second.
If I got offed in the woods late one night, I doubted if three tough guys would go straight to someone's office 8 in the morning, champing at the bit, ready for revenge. Then I looked at the three of them again and thought, this particular perp could be in a shitload of trouble. All I'd have to do is drop a name. I need to ask you some cop questions, I said. I asked him all the usual stuff. Did Carbone have any enemies? Had there been any disputes, threats, fights? The three guys all shook their heads and answered every question in the negative. Anything else, I asked. Anything that put him at risk.
Like what?
One of the older two asked back quietly. Like anything, I said. It was as far as I wanted to go. No, they all said. Got any theories? I asked.
Look at the Rangers, the young one said. Find someone who failed Delta training. Thinks he still has a point to prove.
Then they left, and I sat there chewing on their final comment. A Ranger with a point to prove? I doubted it. Not plausible. Delta sergeants don't go out in the woods with people they don't know and get hit on the back of the head. They train long and hard to make such eventualities very unlikely, even impossible. If a Ranger had picked a fight with Carbone, it would have been the Ranger we found at the base of the tree. If two Rangers had gone out there with them, we'd have found two Rangers dead. Or at the very least, we would have found defensive injuries on Carbone himself. He wouldn't have gone down easily. So he went out there with someone he knew and trusted. I pictured him at ease, maybe chatting, maybe smiling like he'd done in the bar in town. Maybe leading the way somewhere, his back to his attacker, suspecting nothing. Then I pictured a tire iron or a crowbar being fumbled out from under a coat, swinging, hitting with a crunching impact. Then again, and again. It had taken 3 hard blows to put him down. 3 surprise blows. And a guy like Carbone doesn't get surprised very often. My phone rang. I picked it up. It was Colonel Willard, the asshole in Garber's office up in Rock Creek.
Where are you? He asked.
In my office, I said. How else would I be answering my phone?
Stay there, he said. Don't go anywhere, don't do anything, don't call anyone. Those are my direct orders. Just sit there quietly and wait.
For what?
I'm on my way down.
He clicked off. I put the phone back in its cradle. I stayed there. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I didn't call anyone. My sergeant brought me a cup of coffee. I accepted it. Willard hadn't told me to die of thirst. After an hour, I heard a voice in the outer office, and then the young Delta sergeant came back in, alone, the one with the beard and the tan. I told him to take a seat and pondered my orders. Don't go anywhere, don't do anything, don't call anyone. I guess talking with the guy would amount to doing something, which would contravene the don't do anything part of the command. But then breathing was doing something, technically. So was metabolizing. My hair was growing, my beard was growing, all 20 of my nails were growing, I was losing weight. It was impossible not to do anything. So I decided that component of the order was purely rhetorical. Help you, Sergeant? I said.
I think Carbone was gay,
the sergeant said. You think he was?
Okay, he was.
Who else knew?
All of us.
And?
And nothing. I thought you should know is all.
You think it has a bearing? He shook his head.
We were comfortable with it. And whoever killed him wasn't one of us. It wasn't anyone in the unit. That's not possible. We don't do stuff like that. Outside the unit, nobody knew. Therefore, it wasn't a factor.
So why tell me?
Because you're bound to find out. I wanted you to be ready for it. I didn't want it to be a surprise.
Because?
Then maybe you can keep it quiet, since it's not a factor.
I said nothing.
It would trash his memory, the sergeant said. And that's wrong. He's a nice guy and a good soldier. Being gay shouldn't be a crime.
I agree, I said.
The Army needs to change.
The Army hates change.
They say it damages unit cohesion, he said. They should have come and seen our squadron working, with Carbone right there in it.